Hey everybody, quick introduction to today's bonus episode. So you may have noticed I've been uploading a couple of bonus episodes on Fridays over the last few weeks, and this is an experiment that I'm experimenting with. Man, I need a fucking thesaurus. This is something that I'm experimenting with over the next few weeks. So for the next 4 or 5 weeks on Fridays, I'm going to upload a podcast where I have been featured on another show as the guest. And the reason for this is, particularly because I picked some of my favorite interviews that I've done over the last few months. And when I'm on certain podcasts with other people, I'm able to cover topics that I either haven't covered on my podcast, or in the case of especially today's episode with Joanne, someone that has such a great probing style of interview and can lead a conversation in a very positive direction, or in a direction that I haven't previously covered. I think there's so much value in here. So I'm kicking off today's bonus episode where I am the guest on Joanne Larrabee's The Other Side of Perfect. And this is one of my favorite interviews that I've ever done, partly because of the content we covered, partly because of Joanne's amazing ability to steer conversations in a very unique way, and partly because I've talked about things on here that I haven't touched on my podcast, or have only touched on slightly, and they're expanded in today's episode. So today's bonus episode is my interview on The Other Side of Perfect, hosted by Joanne Larrabee. Brian Keane talks motivation, productivity, turning insecurities into strength, and body dysmorphia. So as always, if you're enjoying these bonus episodes, this is just an experiment that I'm trialing for the next month, the next 4 to 5 weeks or so. So let me know what you think. Is it something that you're checking out? Is it something you're getting value from? Is it something you're enjoying? Let me know on Instagram, Brian_Keane_fitness. Tag me and Joanne on your Instagram stories if it's something that you're enjoying, and enjoy today's bonus episode.
Hello and welcome back to The Other Side of Perfect, and what an interview to kick things off with. On today's show, we have the ever-inspiring Brian Keane, who I honestly could have chatted to for hours. It was genuinely a struggle to get this episode down to just one. Brian runs three of Ireland's most successful podcasts and is also the author of bestseller, The Fitness Mindset. His ethos, eat for energy, train for tension, manage your mindset, reap the results, resonates with so many men and women, which is why I think this chat is for everyone. We talk motivation, productivity, turning negatives into positives, using insecurities to create strength, how to deal with weight fluctuations, and the dreaded relationship stone. If you want to walk away feeling seriously pumped, this is the episode for you. Before kicking off today's show, I want to say a massive thank you to our new sponsors, Clean Cut Meals, Ireland's leading meal prep company. I love supporting young Irish entrepreneurs, and these guys are super successful, super sound, and also based in Galway, like today's guest. I went vegetarian about a year ago, and I try to eat plant-based where possible, and I have to say I'm pretty useless at eating on the fly, and the one thing I really struggle with when I get busy is meal prep. I've got a lot of travel coming up over the next few months, and with taking on this podcast, I know I'm going to struggle with my diet, so having meals delivered to my door is definitely going to help. I've worked with this company before, so I know that their meals are delicious, but I'm especially excited about the new vegan menu and veggie options. If you head over to cleancutmeals.ie, you can check out their calorie-controlled meal options for fat loss, muscle building, and even bulking. I'll be sharing some of my favourites on social, but if you're ordering, feel free to use my code Joanne20 for 20% off. Now, let's get into the episode. So I'm currently sat in my kitchen, and I have a very special guest. He's going to be the first guest of the show. I've obviously, in my future self, pre-recorded an intro and gone through all of his accolades and where you will know him from. But the reason why I wanted to get this person on the show was essentially because he is the king of podcasts in Ireland. I think it's safe to say. He's trying to muffle his voice to keep it secret. Is it a guy? Is it a girl? And I suppose because I'm so new to this, I think having the king of podcasts with me recording means that it'll ease me into hosting a little bit better. And also, you're someone who I really, really respect in the industry. You're an entrepreneur that's very motivating to me and a lot of other people, male and female. And you're just an all-around gent. So welcome to the show, Brian Keane.
That's what an amazing introduction. I'm like, how am I going to follow that?
So I kind of briefly touched on why I want you on the show, and it is because you are an entrepreneur and you have a skill set in so many different areas, and I respect your drive. The fact that you're not an average PT at all, that would be one of the minuscule sides of what I'd see you doing for your audience. You obviously have clients, but they're through seminars, through your upcoming third book. So you're an author, you're somebody who has huge experience in speaking to people through so many different platforms. You have three different podcasts. I don't know how the hell you do that. I can barely do one. You manage to do the sports side of things in a different way. It's not just aesthetics, it's endurance. It's very much about training for a living and for speed and for so many different things. And I have a predominantly female audience. They're not all fitness based. And I want to talk to you about subjects that maybe they don't expect you to talk about. But I'd love you to kind of give an intro that's different to mine and not just the bullet point of what you're known for.
Yeah, so my background is I'm a former primary school teacher. So that was my quote unquote real job. You know, we were joking off air that we've got like, you know, non-jobs nearly that we can't believe this is what we get to do. But teaching, similar to your background, it was primary school teaching is what I did. So I worked as a teacher for 4 years, but it was something that I didn't love, even though I liked doing it and loved working with the kids. I was doing it in London, so there's a lot of paperwork. There's significantly longer hours. And it was something that I didn't jump out of bed to do. Mm-hmm. I knew on Friday that every Friday was the weekend, and I knew Sunday evening that I was going to work on Monday, whereas now I don't know what day it is. And probably over the last 2014, I moved back for 2 years in London from 2012 and 2013. I worked the two jobs. It's so funny when you were telling me your story. We were speaking very, very similar worlds in terms of we were teachers during the day, and we had our own business kind of side hustle at nighttime. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I did. For 2 years in London, I worked as a primary school teacher during the day, and I would take clients in gyms or later in the park in the evenings. Mm-hmm. And for 2 years, I did that. And eventually, I moved back to Ireland, to the west of Ireland in Galway, where I actually set up my personal training business the first time full time, and decided I was going to make a go at working in fitness. So I moved back in 2014, got very, very fortunate with the way that my business built and how fast it built because of things like social media. I was using things like Facebook and Instagram mm-hmm. for lead generation and bringing people into one-to-one programs and then later on to online programs. And as a result, I was able to build up that side of my business. And then over the years, I transitioned into an online space. So now I work predominantly online where I'm working directly with people in fitness programs or alternatively in sports programs. I've got two programs that I run. I've got my podcast. I've got the three podcasts, mm-hmm. but my main flagship one is the Brian Keane podcast where, you know, when this goes out on Sunday, stay tuned for Joanne's episode, which will be out at the end of June. And as you mentioned, the books, so writing and speaking, you know, I run mindset seminars. I run business seminars. I run masterminds for people that are in the fitness space trying to build and scale and serve more people within their business. So I kind of do a lot of different things, all things I would do for free. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got one of the best lives ever. Like anyone that ever asked, I'm like, I've got the best life ever. Mm-hmm. You know, I have amazing
living
people.
You're living your hobby and your dream.
It's literally, there's times when I wake up and I pinch myself. I'm like, I can't believe this is my life. You know, having had the contrast of being in jobs that I hated and then jobs that I didn't mind. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a big believer in that, you know, good is the death of great. And, you know, don't fall for the, yeah, it's okay syndrome. And that's what teaching was. It was that, yeah, it's okay. You know, and I would fall for that syndrome where now that's not my answer. You ask me what I do. I'm like, I love what I do. Mm-hmm. Like I've got, as I mentioned, working with people I would work with for free, programs that I work with and design to help people move to better versions of themselves physically, and then the mindset and business space where you're trying to improve people and just serve whatever way you can serve and enhance people's quality of life. And any way that I can do that, I try and do through podcasts, books, etc. So yeah, that's kind of my story and kind of a background.
Do you sleep ever?
I actually.
Do you relax?
Would you believe that I'm like, it's so funny because one, yes, I'm very militant on my sleep. You mm-hmm. know, I get 8 hours every night religiously and 9 hours if I'm training for an event. But that's because I try and be productive in the times that I am awake. And I do get up early. You know, I get up at 5 a.m. every morning, 4 a.m. in the winter if I'm training for an event and need to get, you know, my run in or whatever it is that I'm doing. Also, you know, as you know, I've got my daughter, my 4-year-old daughter, Holly, and, you know, I've got higher priorities in my life than you know, even work, as much as I love it and as much as I love my fitness and all these things, I've got higher priorities in life. So I made a conscious decision about 18 months ago, 2 years ago, to not be busy anymore. You know, it's weird because for me, it felt so good to be like, oh, I'm really busy. I'm really busy. I'm really busy. And the more I realized that saying I was busy was becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I was like, well, I'm not actually being super productive. I'm just being really, really busy. Mm-hmm. And that for me felt like I was out of control of my time or out of control of my life. So I'm actually not that busy. So yeah. I actually, because
you're
I
get managing your time, obviously, in a much better way. That's benefiting everyone. That's important.
That's, you know, I try and live by the value the valuables rule. You know, I get all my productive work done in the morning after I work out. And then I've most of my days, with the exception, you know, we're sitting here in your kitchen, with the exception of the days that I'm traveling, I'm finished most days by 12, 1 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And then I spend it, I go for lunch with my mum. You know, I bring my daughter to the playground if she's not at school, you know, and I don't work weekends. I don't work Saturday and Sunday unless I'm speaking or running a seminar. And I'm very much in control of my time. It's by design. Yeah, mm-hmm. Having been on the other side of being super busy by default, I made a conscious choice about 18 months ago. And I'm kind of living the life now because of it.
It's more routinistic, I suppose, because sometimes one can fall into the trap, as you say, as an entrepreneur, of always being too busy for things. And that's what we always wanted, but that isn't always what we need. And it's kind of getting it into that more of a structure where you're benefiting from it, as opposed to just being busy for the sake of being busy.
Well, understanding the difference between being busy and being productive are two very mm-hmm. different things. And I think when I understood that, it really allowed me to be like, okay, am I being busy now or am I being productive? Because when you get very clear on, say, whatever your end goal is, so, mm-hmm. if, you know, for the day, if it's to record a podcast, write a section of a book, prepare something for a seminar, I'm like, okay, I get that one thing done and my day will be productive if I get that one thing done. You know, everything else in is nearly busy work, even though I do, you know, Instagram story Q&As every day, Monday mm-hmm. to Friday, you know, as you said, several podcasts that go out, but they are prioritized when I'm fresh early on in the day. And I also don't work in what I call kind of dead time, where I know I'm mentally slower during the day, you know, mm-hmm. 12, 1, 2 o'clock. I just can't.
That's your slump.
It's my slump. You know, those tasks that would normally take me 10 minutes could take me 40 minutes, 45 minutes during those times. So I don't work during those times. And I just work at my peak productivity. And for me, that's compounded over time. So for anyone listening, I think that goes for everything. Mm-hmm. You know, for anyone listening, when you get in control of that and you understand when you're at your most productive, when you have your most energy, get your important tasks done there. If you're an entrepreneur, you know, if it's your personal life, if it's fitness, if it's your family, you know, spend your high quality time when you're feeling your most energetic. And then if you can control it, try and avoid doing high priority tasks during those slump times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent advice. I wanted to just jump back to the teaching side of things, purely because I wanted to ask you, I suppose, if you find it has helped you speak well and eloquently and also be like an information machine. That's the way I see you. You just never stop reeling out really valuable information. And sometimes obviously that can take and drain a lot from you because you're constantly giving. But do you think that your teaching background helped you in terms of talking to an audience and gave you almost that confidence to speak and give that information out to people?
Well, it's funny because I'm going to answer that from kind of two parts. My ability to speak largely came from my inability. We joked right before we went on air about writing that I was, you know, I was undiagnosed dysgraphic, where my writing's illegible. So when I was in, say, secondary school, I did really, really poorly in secondary school because I couldn't articulate my ideas onto a piece of paper because it was illegible. Mm. So I just about passed my leaving cert. And then I got to college and I got nearly all A's because I could type. And I got a massive confidence surge in university because I'm like, okay, I actually am kind of clever. That's subjective. But for mm-hmm. me, my mm-hmm. self-worth at the time was low because I'm like, I'm stupid because that's what teachers told me because I couldn't articulate my ideas. But because I couldn't write well, I had to be able to verbalize because if a teacher asked me something, I'm like, I just can't give you the information. Mm-hmm. I used to get mm-hmm. so frustrated. That's why I feel for kids now when I talk to them, yeah. teenagers. But I could articulate it. I'm like, I understand what you're saying and I can say it back to you. They're like, but you have to put it onto paper.
You just needed a different, less restrictive tool. And you were given the same results, but you were too restricted.
I wasn't able to. Yeah, that was it. At the time, it just didn't serve in terms of my ability to put across that information, you know, for biology or English or whatever it was. But because of that, it kind of gave me a seed to be a decent speaker in terms of articulating ideas. And then when I became a teacher, the main skill that I learned in teaching and particularly working with kids who were similar to me in terms of learning style, you had to break down complicated ideas into their simplest form. Mm-hmm. And that's something I try and do now with health and fitness. You know, again, I'm sure it's interpreted in different ways based on the person, but I try and articulate complicated ideas and put them into simple form. Mm-hmm. So I think the combination of having done so poorly in, say, secondary school with my having become a teacher and an ability to, you know, take a task, you know, compound fractions and break it down into its most simplest form so that it can be actually accessed by the child allowed me to hone that. And I think it translates because you're still teaching. We're still teaching, you know. It's so funny because that skill of teaching is, I have a message, I can provide value, I can serve, here's how I do it. And it's just your ability to communicate then is something that you hone, you know, over the years. And I think I got a bit of a head start by being a teacher, probably similar to you.
And I think it's up to you as a teacher to find out how is best digested by whoever you're speaking to, whether it's pupil or audience.
Yeah, it's the same thing. You know, you're one of the things that I loved about having a background as a teacher was learning about all the different learning styles, you know, audio, visual, kinesthetic. There's people and understanding there's no right or wrong way. We spoke about this earlier. There's no right or wrong way really to do anything. It's like, well, what's the best thing for you? Then just applying it to yourself. You know, and it's something that I get to do. And it's funny how you say when you're helping people and serving people, you can, it takes away your energy. I generally find it as the opposite. You know, when I started my social media first, there was a little bit more about me, particularly when I was, say, competing. I used to compete in bodybuilding and fitness modeling, and I did was in that realm for a while. And I would put up a lot of content around myself. Mm-hmm. And that was draining because you're thinking about, well, how is this being interpreted? And it actually wasn't helping anybody. I'm like, yes, you've got abs today. Yes, you've got abs tomorrow. I'm like, you don't need to see it from a different angle. That's not what I did at the time. Mm-hmm, I posted the abs selfies every day. But now it's the opposite. I'm like, okay, like I literally on my Instagram do a 10 question Q&A every day, Monday to Friday. I'm like, what can I help you with? Mm-hmm. You know, in any way that I can help.
It's thinking outward. It's
thinking outwards, but that gives me energy. Like that fills me up. I feel super fulfilled and a high level of meaning when I do that. So it's something that's very easy to continue and do. You know, I try and focus massively on process over outcome. You know, like I love the Buddha quote that if you're not happy on a journey, how are you going to be happy at a destination? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I feel with social media, with the podcast, with particularly the interactive stuff, such as Instagram stories. It's like, you have a problem. I may have some knowledge that maybe be potentially able to help you with your mindset, with weight loss, with, you know, toning up or whatever it is that you want. And I think if you have that knowledge similar to what you do in everything in all your different realms and silos that you work in, it's like you have that knowledge, you need to put it out there, you know, make the world a little bit of a better place because you're here and help in any way that you can.
Was there a pivotal moment where you, I suppose, stopped thinking inward and started moving outward? Was it to do with being almost sick of the negatives that came with vanity? And I think it's fair to say that I'm not calling you vain as per se. It's more so in that industry you can become, and I've been there, so obsessed with seeing yourself in the 2D form. You're seeing so many photos of yourself. You're taking so many photos of yourself that it's quite unhealthy. And was there a moment for you where you thought, this isn't benefiting people in the way that I want, and how can I make that switch?
Yeah, it kind of, it's funny because vain was the right word. Like, it's the person that I was in, say, 2014, 2015. I did my very last show in August of 2015. My daughter was born in May 2015, and I was like committed to this show, which was the Worlds in Las Vegas. And I came eighth in that show and did kind of relatively well in the grander scheme of, you know, an Irish contingent in an international show. But my moment came in kind of two parts. One was when my daughter was born. Because I'm like, oh, all this stuff you've been focusing on isn't important. Like, you don't need to be bigger. You don't need to be leaner. You need to be a good dad now. Mm-hmm. So the kind of seed was planted. And then when I did that show in Vegas, and I did as well as I could have, you know, I came eighth in the world in the, you know, World Fitness Model Championships, which is like a bodybuilding show for like the top fitness models in the world. That show was streamed live on pay-per-view. My mom watched it. And I remember finishing that show and just having this huge feeling of just a hollow feeling.
I'm deflation.
Like, yeah, I was like, okay, that's great. I've, you know, came top 10 in the world. I've achieved the goal that I set out to, you know, what good is that now? I was like, how have I helped anybody by doing this? Mm-hmm. I was like, the world isn't any way better. My daughter's life's not going to improve because I've done this thing. I'm like, okay, you need to start reflect backwards, you know? And I put that, kind of looked in the mirror a small bit, and realize that you need to change this. I'm like, if you died today, nothing has changed. The world is exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a case where I'm like, you know, I just reframed my mindset, rewired my mindset into, right, you have all this knowledge in health and fitness, or in a, particularly in a specific niche. I'm like, share that with people. So I was like, start putting that out there for free. I was like, start putting all that information out and help in any way that you can. And that was a kind of a slow process because I had to figure out social media again, you know, in terms of I wasn't using it for lead generation for business. And then I wasn't using it as a vanity metric on give me more likes mm-hmm. for my photo mm-hmm. and slide into my DMs. Like, you know, it went the other way where I'm like, okay, I need to use this platform for good. Mm-hmm. For the lack of a better term, you know, but I'm not saying all my here. This was my yes. journey in terms of I was using it poorly for other people and it wasn't helping me either. I was feeling really hollow.
It was twofold negativity.
Yeah, it just wasn't working. And it was, yeah, as you said, it was just negative all around. And then I made the transition over and then it just got better. You know, as you start to get the feedback from that, you know, where you were previously getting positive feedback for an ab selfie, which actually doesn't really help anybody. It's normally mm-hmm. a reflex, like, you know, I do the same thing myself. I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, you know,
you look great.
You look great, but it's you're not helping anybody. You know, that doesn't serve in any meaningful way. And then when I started to get the positive feedback on, it was originally videos I was doing, mm-hmm. you know, before the Facebook algorithm change and then Snapchat Q&As when Snapchat was really big. And I started just answering questions and putting out videos on what people were asking me. And when I started to get the feedback on that, where people would send, and particularly when I was down the mindset route, you know, my first book, The Fitness Mindset, the whole second section of that book's all mindset based. Mm-hmm. And when you start to get amazing messages from people who are like, I never thought about it like that. You know, I never thought about looking at this circumstance or this, you know, issue I was dealing with in my life from that vantage point. Your book pointed it out or your podcast pointed it out. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, that's what I was missing in 2015. Mm-hmm. You know, I love the Gandhi quote, you know, you find yourself when you lose yourself in the service of others. Mm-hmm. And that was really applicable for me. I'm not saying that's what everyone should do, but that's what really helped me. You know, and combining that with, you know, my daughter and being like, right, you need to be better for her. You know, make sure the world is better because you were here and, you know, become a person you need to be so that you can be the dad you need to be. That combination helped me just shift direction completely.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. I think it reminds me of what Gary Vee speaks about, that you have to forget in this platform about likes and subscribers and vanity and money and everything. What value are you bringing? Are you trying to sell to a consumer or are you trying to bring value to your audience, whether you get it or not? And I think when you start to make that shift, as you said, you get the real feedback, the feel good feedback that's coming to you from a place of integrity and people who are really opening up from a deep, sad place where you've actually made an impact on their day or their life or their week or their month or even just their mindset overall. And it's just a lovely position to be in, to know that you've made that change for yourself and for other people.
Yeah, I think when one of the things I focus heavily on in business seminars and masterminds is like impact over income. Like, I'm like, if you make impact in people's lives, income will come. Mm-hmm. Like, I can stand here testament to that, that when you're positively impacting people and you're giving them everything they need to succeed, you'll make income off the back end, whether it's programs, speaking, courses, seminars, you know, whatever it is, you will make money doing that. And you will, like, if you're providing value to people, you're going to make money. It's just, you know, it's the currency, like income is the currency of the universe for how much value you're providing. Mm-hmm. What comes with that is that wonderful balance where you're like, I feel super fulfilled. I don't have to worry about money because, you know, people pay for this, that, or the other. And then you can just continually do that going forward, you know, the sustainability of it, you know, mm-hmm. Everything I do, I work off the premise of would I do this for free? Would I work with this person for free? Would I do this thing for free? If the answer is yes, then I go all in on that. And then whatever comes from it, comes from it.
You're not going in with an end expectancy. It's just enjoying the journey.
100%. And then the reason is because I didn't do that in the past. Mm-hmm. Like I was the bodybuilder, the Las Vegas show was a great example of that, where I didn't focus on the process at all. I focus 100% on the end goal. You know, I know this is something with our kind of type A personality. We're both very extreme when we go in on a goal, and that hollow feeling that comes from it, you know, I call it ladder against the wrong wall syndrome, where you're climbing a ladder and then you get to the top and you're like, I'm against the wrong wall. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how
I thought I wanted to be here. I don't.
And the truth is, if you had just paused halfway up that ladder, you'd be like, oh, wrong wall. But what happens for me anyway, I think maybe you can connect with this because of the extremity and personality types, is you get so focused, you don't even take your head up and you just get to the end goal and then you get there and you're like, okay, what now? Mm-hmm. And that's a horrible feeling for me. I was like, I don't want that to happen again. So everything now is about the process, about the journey. If I'm not enjoying it, relationship, business, fitness, health, anything, it gets cut.
And how does it manifest for you if you kind of go back to that place? And we all struggle, I know I certainly do, to revert back to your old self. Sometimes you bad days, tired days, whatever it is, I'm sure your mindset is strong enough to overcome it. But if you can go back to that place and say when you're in the height of competing, how did your negative mindset manifest? Was it in terms of being really insecure? Were you insecure? Did you have any sort of body dysmorphia? Or how does it manifest for men? Because I feel like my audience is predominantly women and we struggle a lot with body image. But I know that it's equally detrimental to the mindset if you do suffer from any sort of negative self-loathing when it comes to the body. So how did that manifest for you?
This is so interesting because we spoke literally before we went on air about, and a lot of your listeners will be familiar with your backstory, you know, plus size model to going full fitness and then back to where you're comfortable in yourself. Mm-hmm. And we spoke and Joanne mentioned about how when she was the leanest at a size 8 compared to 14, 16, you started, you know, editing photos more, feeling worse about yourself. That's how I was when I was competing. Mm-hmm. I actually felt quite decent about the way that I looked until I started to compete.
Okay.
And then what happened is for me, the figurative bar moves and you start comparing yourself to everyone else. And you're, because the truth is you're never going to be the biggest guy. You're never going to be the best looking guy. You're never going to be the leanest guy or the most ripped guy.
Mm-hmm. And the post just keeps on moving.
It just keeps moving. And because of that, I had terrible body dysmorphia. Like I just didn't, we have a negativity bias, you know, something like I'm sure kept us alive thousands of years ago and from an evolutionary psychology standpoint, but our negativity bias, like you'd look in the mirror and be like, okay, yeah, legs are good, arms are good, but geez, my chest is too small. Mm-hmm. And that's all you focus on. You know, I used to work and prepare people for shows back in the day when I was competing and I would see some of the most attractive females, you know, absolutely beautiful girls. And all they could see is a little bit of body fat around their lower back, or their legs were a little bit too big, or they had a little bit of arm fat on the back, and that's all they could see. And there was 95% of them that was amazing. That's how everybody is. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a professional fitness model female or a plus size, you know, someone that's, if you don't feel happy in yourself, mm-hmm. you have to control and figure out what's going on in your mindset. What's going on with your self-worth? What's going on with your value? Fix that. By all means, get in shape. You know, if you want to join a gym and get healthier, lose a little bit of weight and feel more energetic, by all means do that. But don't think that that's the thing that's going to make you feel or improve your self-worth or give you value. Because in a lot of cases, in both of our instances, the post moves. Mm-hmm. As you lose weight, as you get leaner,
there's a new wall, a new ladder, and it starts again.
And it starts again. And that mm-hmm. process will repeat itself. You know, if you don't learn from your mistakes, you're doomed to repeat them. You know, and I did that because I'm like, okay, I will feel better about myself if I just get that little bit leaner. Okay, I'm 7% body fat now. I'll actually feel really good when I'm at 6. And then I get to 6 and go, no, I mm-hmm. need to get to 5. Mm-hmm. And you don't realize that you're just doing this, you know, definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and again and expecting a different result. And that's what I did. And I think regardless of gender, the same thing happens. And just be very, very aware that, yeah, it's great to lose body fat, tone up, you know, look a certain way, drop a few dress sizes, but don't put all your eggs into the basket of self-worth thinking that that's going to be the thing that makes you feel better. Yeah, you'll build confidence from setting a goal and hitting it. But if there's something mindset-wise that you need to fix, it's always worth looking in and addressing that first.
Mm-hmm. Do you think some people are almost addicted to insecurity, addicted to negativity? And it's, you describe, you know, you get to that body fat percentage and it's one below and one below and it's the legs and then it's the arms are the issue or whatever. Do you think that it is part of an addictive personality that we keep moving that post because we're afraid of what if it's just okay? Are we boring? Are we not doing enough? I know I struggle with that where if everything is just going easy breezy and calm and nothing big or high or exciting or, you know, noteworthy is happening, Am I living enough? Yeah. Is a part of that mindset? Do you find that with people?
It depends because obviously personality types vary greatly. And I think obviously people that have that extremity where they're going to go towards a more full on 100% focus on a specific thing are probably going to be a little bit more susceptible to that feeling than mm-hmm. someone that's quite good with pausing, reflecting and going, okay, actually I'm not very happy with this right now. Let's change something. So it is person dependent. In terms of addicted to insecurity, all I know is that unless you catch it as someone that spent years doing it, unless you acknowledge it for what it is and realize that I have a story, I think, that might be able to give a bit of context to this, understanding that for me, it was a self-worth issue. I remember this one time when I was prepping for a show in 2014, I was pretty big and pretty lean, about 85 kilos. And I'm quite short. I'm built like a hobbit, like I'm really short. So 85 kilos is quite stocky. Mm-hmm. But my body fat was low. And I remember I was getting changed in the dressing room after a gym session. And one of the guys looked at me, he was like, your legs used to be bigger. And I was about 3 weeks out from a show. And I remember, firstly, my...
Thanks, mate.
Yeah, well, that's what my mind went to first. Firstly, my mind went to, did they? And I spent the next 5 or 6 minutes looking in the mirror at my legs. Mm. I think back to this moment and I kind of cringe, but you have to, you know, your mess becomes your message. So hopefully mm-hmm. it helps. And I remember looking in the mirror going, fuck, my legs are smaller. And then what I did was my go-to, which my default was, fuck that guy. You know, and looking back on it now, I realized that all my self-worth was tied into the way that I looked, you know, because I didn't have a problem with my legs being too small. I had a problem with my self-worth. I had a problem with when I pulled back the curtain, one of my mentors used to always tell me that you should ask why 3 times on a question. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I had to do was, okay, well, why do you feel bad about your legs being too small? I'm like, because if my legs are too small, I'm not going to do well in the show. What happens if you don't, why don't you do well in the show? Well, if I don't do well in the show, you know, I'm not going to be respected by my peers. It's like, why aren't you respected by your peers? Because I don't feel that secure in everything else that I'm doing. This is my value. My identity is wrapped up in this.
Mm-hmm. So it's so far away from actually being about the legs. It's so much deeper.
Nothing about it. A symptom as opposed to the disease. You know, I feel bad now because I tell that story. Like, it's not that guy, there was no offense. Mm-hmm. There was zero offense. Like,
it's a factual critique coming from him. It's not malice.
No, and there was nothing. He didn't mean any offense by it. He was literally just pointing out that your legs used to be bigger. You know, I'm like, yeah, maybe don't tell someone 3 weeks out from a show when they're feeling a bit, you know, fragile.
Mm-hmm. But, and hungry.
and hungry, you know, stared. I'm like, I just want some chocolate. But that there was nothing, no malice in it, but I took malice to it. One, it affected me negatively, and two, I was like, fuck him. Like, you know, what does he know? And that wasn't helpful. That didn't help either, because now...
Defense just makes you angry.
It just makes you angry. Yeah. It's hurting you both ways. You're hurt internally because you feel insecure now, or more insecure, and now you're projecting that fire outwards towards somebody else who didn't mean anything by it. And that's when I started to realize, and I do that now, even when I feel challenged where somebody will, if something connects, I'm like, oh, one of the theories I talk about at my seminars is the purple polar bear. When somebody says something to you and they go, Joanne, you're fat or you're overweight, and you're like, oh, that hurt. You're like,
that's
okay.
That's your core belief.
Yeah. You're like, okay, that hurt. But if somebody, that same person turned around to you and goes, Joanne, you're a purple polar bear, you'd be like, okay. It's like, all right, great.
Am I cute though?
Yeah. Your mind kind of plays it off and you forget about it. But generally what happens to a lot of people, myself included, is the fat or overweight comment will stay with you for hours and the purple polar bear just drops off. It's like, okay, well, why did one connect and why didn't the other? And I have to do that. I'm like, well, why did that resonate? Why did that connect? And normally it's a value thing. I'm like, right, that's something I need to address. I'm like, it's great. I can sweep it under the rug and say, you know, that person's a twat or whatever it is. But I'm like, why did I connect and resonate with that particular insult? You know, for me, it was my legs. I was like, why did I connect with that particular insult? I'm like, because it was true. You had a self-worth issue that you needed to get underlined and figure out. Because if he said to you, you're a purple polar bear, you'd have forgotten about it within 20 seconds.
It's how you identify yourself, I think.
It's huge. And I think going through life, it's not easy, but going through life and asking yourself, you know, I know it helps me even with if I ever get like projected hate online. I'm like, okay, you know, why did that connect? Because sometimes it doesn't. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody judges me about the way I look now, it washes over my head. Someone calls me too big, too skinny, too lean, too fat. It's a purple polar bear. But I've addressed that part of my life. I have other things that connect mm-hmm. and resonate and hurt. I'm like, oh shit, I'm going to have to deal with that now.
But the aesthetic is not your value anymore, and you don't identify with just your vessel. And so you know your worth internally, and therefore it bounces off. It's like that wall we spoke about in your episode and the penetration of the wall you build up through experiences, negativity, positivity, and it can hopefully bounce back because it doesn't matter to you. You don't hold it at that core value of who you are.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I think your attachment to everything is the important question to ask yourself, you know. And what I love about your wall And it's probably worth expanding on here just to give context, mm-hmm. even though definitely go check out Joanne's podcast at the end of the end of June. It's absolutely class. But tell everybody listening, even just about, just to throw it back on you, about the host coming out at me, about the walk. Because I love this. I'm totally stealing this. So if you hear it on my platforms, it came from here.
Copyright
it came from
JL.
Talk about the walk.
Yeah, so the wall is basically just an analogy that I think I just came up with before we even started filming the podcast. And it was just, I say filming, it's recording, but yeah. I mean, there's no camera crew here. And the wall is just about building up those hurts and almost, I suppose, seeing the hurts and the negativity being thrown at you, whether you're online or not. It could be friends, it could be bullying when you're at school, it could be that teacher that told you you had to use a pen to articulate, or a hater online. And they're the building blocks. They're those stones that you can either use to keep crumbling and keep crumbling at your security and your self-worth, or you can use them to build that wall where you know yourself and your true integrity and who you are, what you're about, your soul, your heart, the value you bring to people, as you mentioned earlier. And once you build that wall up, then those insults, whether it's about your calves or your heart, are going to bounce back and they're not going to penetrate. And sure, there'll be some crumbling here and there. That's normal. We're human. But it'll be the crumbling of the things you care about, e.g. as you speak about your daughter and family and the value you bring people and the peace that you have with your profession.
Yeah, I love that. Like, I'm totally stealing it. But like, one of the things that came to mind when you were speaking about that is I try and separate things into perceived problems and real problems. I'm like, when somebody says something, my body fat's a little bit higher than I'd like, I'm not as fit as I'd like to be, I'm like, that's a perceived problem. I'm like, my mom getting hit by a car and is in a coma. My daughter, you know, God forbid something terrible happens. They're real problems. I'm a big believer, I practice negative visualization, which is an old Stoic philosophy where, and this is to do with my personality, of I have a, it's a really embarrassing thing to say, but I have a very like more personality. You know, I mm-hmm. tend to try and accumulate accolades by proxy of obviously trying to fill an insecure void that I haven't fully dealt mm-hmm. with. And my go-to attitude would be like, do more. And negative.
It's the busy coming back again.
It comes right back in there. And if it's your default, you kind of have to guard against it. But negative visualization is where you literally picture the things that you value most being taken away from you. It's like, well, how would you feel then? And I'm like, that grounds me massively.
It's putting things into context, I think.
That perspective is mm-hmm. huge. It's mm-hmm. extreme. You know, it's a horrible thing to think about, you know, where I'll sit and vision my mom in a coma or visiting my daughter in a hospital bed.
Super powerful though.
So, like it instantly, I'm myself a better dad because of it, a better son because of it. You're more present. You know, think about all the things in your life. And we all have versions of this. Things in your life that you're like, because it's so easy to be like, I want this, I want that, I want this partner, I want this boyfriend, I want this girlfriend, I want this body. But it's like, okay, well, but just flip the switch on that for a minute. Think about the things that you do love, the things that you do have, and now picture them being taken away from you. Mm-hmm. And it grounds you in kind of gratitude. And that's something that is a very powerful tool that I use. And it's extreme, but it's something that's been very serving for me and just something I want to share on the podcast.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. In terms of extremities, we touched on that kind of earlier, and we would be type A personalities, a little bit more extreme. I think my following would know from my content that if I'm doing something, you know, 100%, and if I'm not doing it, I'm not doing it at all. And I suppose I wanted to ask you, because I get a lot of followers who ask me how I deal with that in terms of fitness. And I know that you're the right person to ask, because for me, PTs that are just about aesthetic, they don't work for me. I need someone who's all about mindfulness and mindset and wellness and the wellness of your mental health, essentially. And if I was to come to you as a client and I told you my story and my journey and how I can fall into the trap of training twice a day, cardio, you know, tracking every single morsel going into my mouth or not at all and almost binging, how would you advise somebody to be less extreme and to bring that balance into their life for sustainability?
So what I had to do was I developed my four quadrants is something that I break my life into. So when I came off the back of that show I spoke about earlier in Vegas in 2015, I realized that I had given so much weight to a certain area of my life and everything else was kind of falling by the wayside as a result. This took me about 6 or 7 months after to kind of complete, but I ended up building up four quadrants. So I break my life, and I still do this to this day, into four quadrants. One is health, my physical health, my mental health. One is wealth, my, you know, bank account, paying bills. One is love, my personal relationships, my family relationships. Romantic relationships are in there as well, and fulfillment. So the things that make me jump out of bed every morning, mm-hmm. writing books, podcasts, etc. And I score those out of 10 every month. You know, I started first every day and then I went to every week and now I do it every month. And if I find that my life is getting out of balance in any one of those, I try and bring it back. And there's nothing wrong necessarily with going out of balance in some, sometimes, you know, one of my friends who lives in Dubai, a very successful entrepreneur, Tom Martin, talks about micro balance or micro imbalance for macro balance. He's like, sometimes it's okay to be microly imbalanced in something if mm-hmm. it gives you macro balance wholly.
Somewhere else.
Yeah. And that's, but I think for me and for anybody listening that does well with accountability, as most people do, I think you have to look at your life as an entire whole. And that's something that I did as a personal trainer, something I do in my online content is, yeah, fitness is great. Looking a certain way is great. But your mental health is equally as important. Your connections with your family are also important, or the connections with loved ones. Mm-hmm. You know, if sometimes family isn't blood family, sometimes family is other people, depending mm-hmm. on your life setup and, you know, how you were brought up and the people that are in your life at the minute. And I think being aware that for me, I have to have a visual. You know, I'm very visual in the sense that I've got those four quadrants on my wardrobe in my bedroom. Mm-hmm. And I just, it just brings me back to them. I'm like, okay, health wasn't great this month. You missed a lot of training sessions, but that's okay. Next month, you're training for an ultra marathon or you're training for this. You need to bring that up. You know,
so there's acceptance there.
There's acceptance. And that's the, again, it comes back to the attachment. Mm-hmm. An over attachment to looking a certain way, living a certain way, being a certain way. That's where the problem comes for me. And particularly when you're an extreme lifestyle, because you identify with somebody that does these things, mm-hmm. you know, and that can be a problem in itself, because that leads to an asymmetry in your life where there's just a complete out of balance. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's just bringing awareness to it. And I think anybody that is similar to me or you or anyone that finds value in that, mm-hmm. just be aware of it. Don't ask yourself, what are you doing mindlessly? You know, what part of your life is on autopilot? I always mm-hmm. think of autopilot. Mm-hmm. Like, and we all have versions of our life. For me, for years, it was romantic relationships. That was the part of my life on autopilot. I never brought conscious awareness to that part. I'm mm-hmm. like, it just happened by default. For other people I work with, it's their food. Some people have food on autopilot. They never think about it. They just eat and there's no conscious thought about it. Mm-hmm. So we all have parts of our lives that are on autopilot. It's just bringing conscious awareness to it and then asking, do you want to change it? Because there's nothing wrong if you don't, you know, like
if it's not broken, don't fix it.
100%. Like it's sometimes I get a little bit of pushback from fitness people and other personal trainers. Because if someone's, you know, a few stone overweight and they're super happy, I'm like, fuck. I'm like, you're doing it well. I'm like, you're doing it right. You know, now taking out the health implications, mm-hmm. you know, but purely from a happiness standpoint, I'm like, fuck. I'm like, what you're doing is good. Mm-hmm. I'm like, where I get pushed back sometimes from fitness people. They're like, no, people are overweight. They're bad. There's something mm-hmm. wrong. I'm like, no. They're fucking happy. They love what they're doing. I was mm-hmm. like, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm like, okay, if you want to argue the health standpoints, yeah, I'll totally entertain
it's
that.
It's a different argument though, different I suppose. Different argument. Yeah.
I'm like, but if they're happy, I'm like, dropping more dress size isn't going to make them happier. Like, I'm like, they're already good. I'm like, leave them alone. Mm-hmm. Like, so I think being aware of your weaknesses, your what you have on autopilot and what parts of your life you want to improve, I think that's the first step. And then after that, it's just putting plans in place to hit whatever end goal you set for yourself. Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that I would find really difficult, and I'm sure it's a lot of different clients that you experience, and certainly a lot of my followers, is fluctuations. And with that comes different identifications with yourself and how you value yourself, because your vessel is changing. And did I feel better when I was smaller or bigger, or how do I feel now? And you're constantly kind of, I suppose, scrambling to find that inner peace and happiness. And to some people, that can be a size. And the struggle for me and a lot of other people is, when I would gain weight, I may be happier in my real life. Online life kind of gives me an extra pressure. And so I feel that a lot of people, you know, that resonates because social media is so prevalent and you're keeping up appearances online. And maybe when you actually look inward, you're just fine, you're happy, but you're pushing those posts for someone else. How would you kind of advise somebody that's living their life almost for someone else unconsciously, perhaps through social media, through likes, subscribers, through being a certain size or getting a certain award in terms of bodybuilding? How do you kind of bring it back and just remind somebody that, you know, to be grounded and what's really important?
Probably the best advice I can offer on this is I kind of do like, you know, I picture myself in the future of whatever that vision you have in your mind of that size or, you know, that amount of followers. I do this sometimes with followers on Instagram. So it allows me to focus on the quality of people I have right now and not building the quantity as much. I focus on, okay, let's fast forward 18 months. Let's fast forward 2 years. Put yourself in the position of, right, I am that size now, or I have that amount of followers. Does anything change? You know, and be really...
It's the why again.
It's the why. Be super honest with that. Because the weird thing is the answer is sometimes yes. Like, sometimes the answer is yes. You're like, yes, I would be significantly more confident and more secure if I looked this way. I'm like, okay, then maybe that is worth going after. But in a lot of cases, you're like, actually, no. I'm like, that's not the part of my life that's wrong. There's other issues going on. And asking why, you know, what I used to do with a lot of my female clients, particularly when I was working one-to-one as a trainer, was I would ask them the why three times. You know, I'm like, well, okay, why do you want to lose weight? They're like, oh, because I, you know, I don't feel that confident. I'm like, okay, what would happen if you felt more confident? I, you know, I'd feel more attractive in a room. I'm like, why do you want to feel more attractive in a room? You know, so, you know, guys will approach me. I'm like, okay, why do you want guys to approach you? Because I'm single and I'm lonely. I'm like, okay.
That's where they're.
That's where they are. And now you can make a choice. For me as a trainer, I use that motivation to inspire them to stay, to get in shape and stay on track when they felt like falling off. So for me, I used it as a, nearly like a, for the lack of a better term, like a carrot to work towards, because I'm like, right, hitting numbers on a scale isn't deep enough. I'm like, we need to figure out why you're doing this. I'm like, because it gets hard, you know, following a fitness regimen, eating a certain way until you build it around your lifestyle and schedule and you're used to it. It's difficult in the beginning, but having an end goal on why you want it can make you decide then, right, this is one way that might make me feel less lonely, but are there other ways? And also you just guard people in. If you're like, right, you want to lose weight, but if you meet somebody tomorrow, does that goal go away? Exactly. And then just being aware of that and then making decisions on, do I want to continue with this? Do I want to dedicate 4 hours a day to training, which you don't need to do? But, you know, addictive personalities can, when all you really want is a partner or someone that you can communicate with. You know, I'm also a believer that, you know, be good by yourself. You know, set up an environment for good things to happen, and those people normally tend to enter your life. But just being aware of it, I think, is key, and just asking those questions.
Because I'm definitely someone, like when you're saying that, I'm just kind of nodding in my head, thinking I'm that person that when I'm single, I train more, and when I'm in a relationship, you know, they say the relationship stone. I definitely think I fall into that trap of almost comfort. And I think you ease into yourself as you get older too, because you start to just accept a little bit more. And there's less, you know, struggle with the mind of what exactly you want. It becomes less about material things and more about the reality of, as you say, your mom, your daughter, the people that are important. And if you have a really good person as your partner, you feel invincible.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, you're like beyond the stone.
Yeah.
And you kind of, you go back to say, oh, shit, you know, there's my four things on my wardrobe and one of them has slayed completely. And am I happy? Yeah, cool. But can we just bring it back and just remind yourself to kind of integrate that routine again? Because what can then happen, I find, is in a relationship, there's a little demise sometimes for people because they've lost themselves.
Yeah.
And that's their vessel too. They used to train and all of a sudden they've put on weight and then they don't identify with the same person. They don't feel sexy anymore. That relationship stone is so much more than that scale's weight. It is about them losing who they were when they met that partner.
But that's why I think being intrinsically motivated to be a, to live a certain way is really important, you know, and intrinsically, because you've set a goal, because I want to feel a certain way and I'm going to train and eat a certain way because I want to feel this way. There's a big difference between that and I want to look this way so John or Sarah thinks I'm attractive or whoever it is. Like, there's a big difference in that intrinsic and extrinsic motivation, and not getting wrapped up in it. Like, I've seen that where I'm very fortunate that it didn't really happen to me. Definitely not in later life, where you'd have a breakup and then you'd lose part of yourself, particularly not the fitness side, because it's something I've always loved. But I've seen it with friends where they would get very codependent, guys and girls. And then when they'd break up, it was like a part of them died temporarily. You know, they're the
you're actually mourning the loss of yourself.
Agreed.
More than the ex.
That's it. And that's a very real thing. And there's nothing wrong if that happens, you know, but own that for what it is and be like, right, learn. There's nothing wrong with making mistakes, but there is something wrong with not learning from them. You know, if you do that, this relationship, then it happens again 6 months later. It happens again a year later with somebody else. You're like, you're making the same mistake over and over again. I'm like, that you need to address. There's nothing wrong with failures. There's nothing wrong with mistakes. but learn from them. You know, there is something wrong with not learning from them. You know, if you've came out of a relationship and you felt absolutely soul destroyed, you're like, okay, I lost part of myself in that relationship. For me to succeed with the next person and be a better version of yourself. In this, again, I'm not a relationship expert by any means. This is a fitness thing nearly tied up and using an analogy of a relationship to give context to it. Don't lose yourself in whatever it is you do. And the fitness is the same. You know, we spoke earlier when you were plus size going to fitness training twice a day, you're losing your identity and your identity is shifting as you move more extreme into fitness. It's like, you need to understand who you are in general and have your self-worth all tied up. And then if you want to get in shape, get in shape. If you want to live a certain way, live a certain way. But don't tie all the external stuff to it.
Yeah, it's again, attachment and acceptance.
Yeah.
I know that sometimes it can be quite difficult when you are your brand to separate. And you're so motivational and you're so engrossed in your work and you've definitely got that balance now in terms of working, Brian. Do you find it's difficult if you're in a relationship to separate Brian Keane Fitness and Brian? Do you feel it's one and the same? Because I mean, when I meet you, you're the same online and I love that. You're the same in person, same online. So is Brian Keane Fitness everywhere? Like in a relationship, online, the same?
To the large extent. That has pros and pros and negatives. My ability to, what I've always struggled with romantic relationships, and I think business is a little bit similar, and I think having my daughters definitely helped me with this, is your 100% is only 50%. What I love about the gym is if you give 100%, you get 100% of the results. In a relationship, you give 100%, that's still only 50% of the results.
Yeah.
And Holly's taught me, my daughter, massively about that, because I'm like, I can give everything I can as a father, assuming you can give 100%, which is probably impossible. Mm-hmm. That's still only 50%. You know, I think of parenting like, you know, flying a kite. I'm like, you can control how you hold on to the kite, but you can't control what way the wind blows. And I think relationships are very, very similar. But there are positives from quote unquote Brian Keane Fitness to Brian Keane personal life. You know, I try, you know, I've failed and pathetic as much as everybody else, you know, the way we are as human beings, but I try and take accountability and extreme ownership for everything, you know, the good, the bad and the ugly. So when somebody points something out to me in a relationship, they're like, I really don't like that you do this. Mm-hmm. If I resist it, similar to the purple polar bear, I'm like, okay, constructive criticism, I can improve. Or if I resist it, I'm like, oh, just grind my teeth and go, I'm resisting that for a reason. I need to lean into this and figure out, you know, what part of my character can be improved, because this isn't serving this particular relationship, because this is bothering, you know, whoever it is. You know, The other 50%. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I'm not a relationship expert, but I try and live by the philosophy, how you do anything is how you do everything. So the way I approach business, the way I approach fitness, the way I approach relationships, the way I approach family relationships, everything, I try and go in fully committed, or else I don't go in at all. You know, we're so similar in that sense. You know, I'm all in or I'm nothing. You know, if I'm seeing somebody, if I'm going out with somebody, if I'm trying to cultivate a relationship, I'm all in on that. And I'm 100% trying to make that work. And the same with every other area of my life. It's just that I've always struggled with that part because I never brought conscious awareness to it. It was on autopilot. And that's something that I've been honing over the years. And all I'm doing is sharing my issues with it, my struggles, in the hope that they connect with people who are slightly behind or maybe slightly further ahead, who are like, yep, that reinforces what I'm doing is right. That's going to help me because, you know, he's terrible at that and I'm good at this. I need to keep doing what I'm doing. And that serves both ways.
And accepting that we're not perfect. As you said, we're human. We're actually made to make mistakes. Some of us make it publicly, some of us make it privately, but it actually impacts the exact same way because your inner voice is either really happy or really sad. Mm. And it doesn't matter who your platform is, whether it's a partner or whether it's an audience.
100%.
So I'm going to put you on the spot completely here. You start your podcast sometimes with a joke.
I do.
Will you end mine with one?
I will. Oh, so bad. I've got the worst.
They're
jokes.
Really bad. They're jokes, so bad. Guys.
They're so bad. Oh, this one's going to be terrible too because you can't fucking see it either. Okay. No, I didn't pick a different one because you need a visual for that one. That's my Napoleon joke. I'm going to tell my Napoleon joke.
I can put in like an insert here for a trainer.
It's like, one of my friends told me before, and I love this joke, and it's the worst joke in the world, and no one's going to laugh because you're all going to hate it and be like, unsubscribe from everything Brian Keane Fitness has ever done. He's a fucking twat. But it's like, where does Napoleon put his armies?
I don't know, Brian.
At the sleeveys.
Oh.
Oh, dreadful. Oh, I can't believe you made me in with a joke. I love that joke.
You also, we see that everyone else has to love it because you love it. It's okay. You also usually put people on the spot with three questions at the end. So I have three for you. Is that okay?
Go for it.
Okay. Career or marriage?
A career, because I'm actually not a massive believer in, I'm not against marriage at all, but I would be very happy to go through the rest of my life with a romantic partner who I love and cherish and never put a governmental paper over it. Yeah, I'm not married to the idea of marriage, for the lack of a better term, but career every time if they're the two.
Gotcha. Aesthetics or mindset?
Mindset, 100%. I think, ironically, what happens when you get your mindset right is the aesthetics follow, because all the things that it takes you to strengthen your mind, discipline, sacrifice, leaning into struggle, learning from failures, all these mindset things are what will make you more aesthetically pleasing if you want to change your body composition.
I guessed which ones you were going to go for, and I'm doing well so far. It's 2 out of 3. Failure or success?
Oh, failure. Every day of the week.
3 out of 3.
Yeah, I'm a massive believer in failure. It's not that I don't like success. It's just that you learn nothing from success, because sometimes what you're doing externally might be perceived as success, but there's no learning tool because it worked. Whereas failure, there's feedback. You know, you have direct, and every single failure in your life, every relationship, every failed diet, every failed business, you have feedback on what doesn't work and what you need to do going forward. I think success is a terrible teacher, and I think failure is the best one.
Totally agree. That's awesome. I feel like success is like what's over that wall on the wrong ladder.
Yeah.
Oh, I got it. Oh, I won.
Yeah.
Okay, what next? What next? What next? But failure is those pivotal moments in our life where we go, boom, my life changed.
Yeah.
This has been amazing. Brian Keane, thank you so much. Where can my followers find you if they're not already following you?
Podcast is the Brian Keane Podcast. Instagram, Brian Keane Fitness. They're the two that I'm the most active on.
And they can check out our episode together as well, which is awesome, at the end of June.
Love it. Thank you so much again.
Whew, mind blown. I hope you guys took as much from that as I did, because I genuinely walked away feeling so motivated and such a positive energy. What a guy. If you enjoyed, please do rate, review, subscribe to Brian, and share it with anyone who you think may benefit. All details and links will be left in the description bar as always, and I'll see you on the other side of perfect.